Oh, and here we are. We are finally back together again. It's been, what, 3 weeks, Dalton, now? We're finally back on the Bi-Coastal Baseball Podcast on the Grid Network, the only exclusive baseball podcast on the Grid Network. I'm Mike Guido. That's Dalton Brown. It's been like, what, 3 weeks? But you look a little thinner. I know your wedding's coming up. You binging a little bit or no?
No, honestly, if anything, I've probably gained a pound or two. I think it's just because I got a haircut. You know, we're a little high. So I think it's just got me looking a little thinner in the face. So hopefully I can keep that going for another week.
Maybe.
I totally let myself go.
Hey, listen, I'm one for wedding stress. I think I lost, I don't know, I probably lost 30 pounds for the, you know, in 3 weeks. But the weeks before my wedding, I was absolutely losing my mind. Anyway. Enough of that. Let's start getting into things. We have plenty of stuff to go over today. I know we really, Dalton is desperate to tie a bow around this whole Shohei Ipe thing so that we can never, ever talk about it again. So we'll talk about that, I don't know, probably 20 minutes from now or so. And I have a take on this that I think Dalton is going to absolutely love. And if you don't sense the sarcasm in my voice, I hope you can see it for all the viewers that that are watching. So we'll tie a ball around that. What's going on with all these pitcher injuries? Spencer Strider is now out for the season. Gerrit Cole is going to be missing half of the year. That's only just to name a few. There is an extensive list of pitchers that are going to be out for the foreseeable future. We'll touch on that. How worried should Astros fans be with their rough start to the season? We'll touch on that. Plus, we've got some favorite series of the week going forward. What are teams of the week in the week prior? Plus, throughout the show today, I said this with Alfred the other day, last week or 2 weeks ago when we did the show. Now that the season starts, we got live score updates throughout the broadcast, so this is going to be fun. Let's start today with this. Obviously, we cater to both our fan bases, Yankees, Dodgers over there. So let's start with the Yankee rant. I actually have plenty to touch on today. There's three things, really, I want to talk about. The first being that the news broke today, and this is more of a sentimental Yankee thing, that the longtime radio broadcaster John Sterling has announced his retirement. He is done. And listen, he's 85 years old. I'm actually surprised that he didn't do it sooner. Him and Susan Waldman have been on the air forever. Susan Waldman was actually the first voice ever heard on WFAN here in New York. So an absolute kudos to him for a fantastic career. His voice is going to be missed. You know, the Yankees away. I think that could be appreciated pretty much everywhere in the country except for maybe Boston. But he's retiring. Congrats on a great career. An absolute legend. One of my heroes. Here's the other thing, and I think, you know, Dalton can attest to this as well. There are two things really that I'm surprised about. The first thing being, I'm actually stunned at how good the Yankee starting pitching has been to start the year. Now, Luis Gil is struggling tonight with command. He walked in a run already. It's like there are going to be those starts, but they have the third lowest team ERA in the entire major leagues at this point. Their starting pitching has been outstanding. Marcus Stroman, with the exception of his last start, has had two absolutely perfect outings so far in the Bronx. Carlos Rodon looks like he's back to his old self. That's really encouraging to see. And their bullpen, obviously, I don't think we had any questions about their bullpen, but their bullpen has been absolutely lights out to start the year. That's great to see. Even without Jonathan Loaisiga, who's out for the year. That's another pitcher injury that we're going to touch on later. And the other thing really is the transformation of Anthony Volpe from year one to year two. I mean, his entire approach is different. And I think Juan Soto probably has something to do with that, but he's just sort of leveled out his swing to a point where he's striking out way, way less, putting the ball in play way, way more. He's finding himself in clutch situations and coming through to the point where now he's becoming the leadoff hitter in the Yankee lineup, and rightfully so. I have a lot to be happy about right now as a Yankee fan, Dalton. I'm feeling pretty good to start the year, I got to tell you.
I mean, there's no real reason that you wouldn't. I mean, it's really you touched on it. The starting pitching is really the most exciting thing happening there. You know, I mean, I think it's not shocking to see Stroman pitch well.
Yeah.
You know, Rodon, though, I mean, look, he's back, right? I mean, everybody who you listen to who knows pitching, you're seeing the same stuff from him that you see from him when he's dominant, which is a guy who's just ridiculously confident with his fastball. Yeah. You know, he pitches with a certain swagger when he knows he's confident. You can see that with him right now. But I think a big part of why the Yankees are where they are right now is the fact that you've got guys like Luis Gil who are stepping up and keeping them in ballgames. Clark Schmidt, keeping them in ballgames, pitching competitively. I mean, Cody Poteet this weekend, good outing for them, right? Like, at the end of the day, when the guys who you're not counting on to do anything other than, you know, they start the game and you're hoping, hey, if I can get 5 innings, 3 or 4 runs, just keep us in it, I'd be happy. When those guys are going out there and putting up, like, a quality start, that's, you know, you're cooking with gas at that point. So because the question was never, can the Yankees score runs or can they hold leads? Right. Those are the things that you're confident about going into the season. And so when you're getting good starting pitching, this is what that team can look like. And, you know, you should feel encouraged because there are reinforcements of various kinds probably to come down the line, especially considering how they start. So plenty to be excited about there. I don't blame you at all. And, hey, I think for the good of this podcast, it's awesome seeing the Yankees playing so well because it's going
to be right
for us. You know, as far as the Dodger rant's concerned, kind of an uneven week for the Dodgers. You know, they take 2 out of 3 in Minnesota. Solid series there. You know, drop 2 out of 3 at home to San Diego. You know, right now with the Dodgers, I think there's a lot of what's going on with them that mirrors who they were last year. The pitching injuries, just like last year, have mounted to a point that's pretty hard to overcome. I mean, they've got 8 guys at this point who are like, at the very least, solid major league quality, but most of whom are at least all-star quality, at least at some point in their career, who are not available. So it's a frustrating situation. It's one that will get better over time. Walker Buehler will be back within a few weeks. That will certainly help. We'll see how he looks, but that will certainly help. Bobby Miller, hopefully this is just a short stay on the IL for him. I think the starting pitching I'm less worried about than the bullpen. But the reality with the bullpen, and we've heard Andrew Friedman say this all the way back to 2019, bullpens are pretty random year to year. Like, you expect the bullpen to be random year to year. It's why when somebody tells me going into a season, hey, our bullpen's going to be great or our bullpen's going to stink, it's like, guys, we don't know. Like, there are usually a couple guys who you feel pretty good about. Like, I think, you know, when Brewster was healthy, that's a guy you feel decent about. Trinan's a guy that if he's healthy, you feel pretty decent about him. Neither one of them is. Evan Phillips is a guy you feel good about. And Daniel Hudson, surprisingly, is a guy that I feel pretty consistently good about. But outside of those two healthy arms, Hudson and Phillips, it's been pretty bad. We don't have a lefty we can rely on. Vesia is a mess. Joe Kelly is Jekyll and Hyde, like he always is. You know, so that's a concern for the Dodgers at the moment. Look, the reality with this team is they're going to bang out so many runs that it's not really going to matter in the regular season. Right. Like, it's not like we're, you know, at like the Dodgers are going to win 100 games comfortably. The bullpen's not going to stop that from happening. I'm not super worried there. It's more so, you know, hey, can we carve out a way over the next few months that by the time we get to the games that matter in October, we can string together 3 or 4 innings when we need to.
Right.
There's plenty of time to figure that out. It's not worth panicking over. The one other kind of blemish on the Dodgers right now is the 7 through 9 in the lineup has been really rough. I'm not too worried about that either. Gavin Lux is swinging a better bat than it looks like. He's, you know, I'm making a lot of good contact. That's not turning into anything. James Outman's starting to come around. He had a couple home runs this week in Minnesota.
Yeah.
The big concern right now is Chris Taylor. He looks completely lost. He's like 1 for 36 or something at this point.
Yeah.
But Andy Páez is slashing .371 with a 1.146 OPS down at AAA Oklahoma City. Any day now, he's going to get called up. And when he does, it's hard to see that bat not translating. So there are reinforcements to come offensively. There are reinforcements to come on the pitching staff. Sitting at 11-7, I think you can make an argument that they should be better, but it's also like it's the first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah.
So that's kind of
– Yeah. Yeah, it's not – full-blown panic mode for the Dodgers as of yet. I agree with you. I think that, listen, they are going to mash their way into wins so often. And honestly, I really don't know that the rotation is a problem. I really don't. I think Yamamoto is going to be good over time, right? First of all, I love Bobby Miller. I think Bobby Miller is going to be really good for a long time. Like, that guy's really got great stuff. So I agree with you. I think it's early in the year. You can make the argument, like you said, that they would be, that they should be better at this point, but they'll be fine. There's going to be reinforcements on the way. And I think, again, even the guys that are struggling, they're going to just go back. They're going to progress towards the mean anyway. You know, it's a long season. Ebbs and flows happen in Major League Baseball. So
totally. And the thing is, too, hitting, you know, to touch on the starting rotation, we didn't even mention Tyler Glasnow's name.
Yeah.
If the season were to end today, he's probably your NL Cy Young.
Yeah. He's been great.
And I'm not, you know, unless he gets injured, I'm not really, like, he should be the favorite at this point to win that award.
So far.
Especially with what happened to Strider, which is super unfortunate. We'll talk plenty about that stuff soon. But, you know, it's like that is really nice for the Dodgers this year. They have a legitimate bona fide ace at the top. And, you know, Yamamoto, I think, will become more consistent over time. So,
yeah. He's just got a Padres problem, I think, Yamamoto. I think the Padres might just have his number a little bit.
I mean, and part of it is that I think the Padres take the right approach with him. Like, they recognize that it's still very early in his career, and he's trying to get used to throwing strikes on a big league mound in the States. And
they're
just jumping on first pitch fastballs, and they're doing a good job with it. And I'm telling you, this Padres team, you heard me say it preseason, I think it's a good ball club. Like, I really do. I think that's a good ball club. So, I'm glad the Dodgers are getting some of these games out of the way early, because they're going to be pesky. They're going to be annoying.
Yep. All right. So here we go. Dalton's finally here for his first score update. So as of right now in Major League Baseball, the Yankees right now are trailing the Toronto Blue Jays in the bottom of the third, 3-1. Alejandro Kirk is a Yankee killer. I absolutely hate it. So 3-1 Blue Jays over the Yankees right now. They just ended. They're going into the fourth inning. Going into the sixth, the Orioles right now lead the Twins 6-2. We have a top seven, 1-0 Rangers over the Tigers in Detroit at the moment. Detroit is one of those teams I think we're going to be talking about at least for the next couple of weeks. They're a very interesting ball club right now. Colorado and the Phillies right now are knotted at 1 in the bottom of the sixth. Giants and Marlins. The Marlins right now, they're starting to win a couple of games now. 3-1 over the Giants right now in Miami. The Rays have a 1-0 lead over the Angels at the moment. Top of the fifth, we are still scoreless between the Pirates and the Mets. Brewers right now, bottom of the second, 1-0 over the Padres. Kansas City and Chicago are scoreless in the third, and the Braves and the Astros are just kicking off in the top of the first. The Guardians beat the Red Sox today 6-0 in the whatever it was. It was like an 11:15 in the morning game. So I
know football is a big deal in Texas, but they're kicking off in Houston tonight. That's how they're starting that game.
They're kicking off in Houston tonight. Wow. That's right. That's all right. So let's go to our 1-2-3 inning. The first out right now. So let's dive into this, Dalton, because I know. Listen, you growing up, you and I both were pitchers in our day. You were much better than I was. But I still was, and I got hurt. So I tore my UCL twice when I was in high school. I tore it when I was 14, and I tore it when I was 16. Not once did I get surgery. I did not get Tommy John. I probably should have, but I elected not to, and I was out for a year both times. So here's the skinny of it. We are dealing with what seems to be an unreasonable amount of pitching injuries to start this season, right? And these are not like 10-day, like miss a couple of start injuries. These are long-term, out till the summer, out for the unforeseeable future sort of injuries. I mean, we're seeing Gerrit Cole. Obviously, we saw him get hurt earlier on in spring training. Spencer Strider, the news just came out this weekend that he's going to be out for the remainder of the season, which is terrible for me. He was my Cy Young Award winner this year. I guess that's going to have to wait. So Spencer Strider's out. Shane Bieber, who was off. Let me just say this. Shane Bieber was off to a phenomenal start to this season, and he is now out for the year. the amount of injuries that we're seeing out of the Marlins, right? It seems like everybody on the Marlins is hurt. Sandy Alcantara is still hurt. Yuri Perez is out for the season. Edward Cabrera, Braxton Garrett. Those are some of those names. DeGrom, Scherzer, Verlander, Framber Valdez. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on about injuries here. And some of these guys are among the older variety. They're veteran guys. But it just seems like more often now we're just seeing more and more like shoulder, elbow, and I feel like most often it's elbow injuries in pitchers. And you have a ton of different arguments, right? It's age of when they start throwing breaking balls or something like that. It's velocity. It's training to throw as hard as you can. I mean, Dalton, what do you make of all this? Does baseball actually have like an inherent problem with the way they develop pitchers, the way they scout pitchers? Like what is contributing to what seems to be like an epidemic of pitchers' arm injuries at the moment?
So a couple things. You know, I think part of what has made it look worse this year is that so many of the guys that have been getting hurt this year are the premier pitchers in the game.
Yes.
Now, I will say the idea of there being a flurry of arm injuries in the first month of the season is not new, right? That's something that we actually see that last few years. Now, that being said, last few years has been a massive uptick from the decades that preceded it. Yeah. You know, the easiest thing to point to right now, as far as what we know, is guys who are throwing harder and obsessing over throwing harder. There seems to be a pretty clear correlation between who those guys are and the guys who end up missing time due to not only elbow injuries, but just various arm injuries, right? Yep. If you look at the top 10 starting pitchers in baseball by average fastball velocity last season, 8 of those 10 are currently on the injured list. Like going down the list, Bobby Miller on the IL, Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez, Grayson Rodriguez, Spencer Strider, Shohei Ohtani, he's playing but he's not pitching, Shane McClanahan, Garrett Cole. That's 8 of the 10, right? Like Hunter Green and Jesus Luzardo are the other two guys on that list. My main takeaway is this. We keep seeing pitchers in the minors get like babied from an innings perspective. And we see that continue when they first get called up to the bigs. I'm kind of thinking that this is not helping. I mean, I want to be clear about what I'm saying there. I'm not suggesting that the innings limits being put on guys and them not throwing as much is what's causing the injuries.
Right.
But what I am saying is that it's not preventing them. So given that, right, like the other night, Paul Skenes was pitching for the Pirates in the minors. I forget at what level he's at, right? But he was pitching the other night. And they pulled him after like 3 1/3 innings and 60-something pitches, 70, yeah. You know, 60-something pitches, I think it was. Like, why are we doing that? Like, are we not trying to develop him to be a starter? Because if we are, let's let him start games. Let's let him go through starts. Let's let him get into that rhythm. Right.
Yeah.
Because at this point, like, whatever arm injuries you think you're solving by babying a guy, like Bobby Miller was babied, Sandy Alcantara was babied, Yuri Perez was baby. Grayson Rodriguez was baby. Like, look down the list of these guys who are hurt. Yep. They were all babied, right? So that's one takeaway I have is let's stop babying starting pitchers when they're coming up as young guys. Let's let let's let the dog eat a little bit. You know, but to me, as far as like the culprit of it, it's systemic. This isn't something that's going to get solved quickly. This is probably something that hangs around for a generation where until we figure out either how to treat this where guys get back quicker or we figure out some small thing mechanically that's leading to it happening, we know that the cause is that guys are obsessed with throwing harder because that's how you get paid. Guys aren't going to stop trying to throw harder and get paid.
Yeah.
So, like, this isn't – like, to me, this is not a problem that's going to get solved anytime soon, and so we should stop trying to solve it and – maybe instead focus on let's not do things that clearly aren't solving it because those things are taken away from the game. So that's my main takeaway at the moment. But the other thing that I'll say, Clayton Kershaw touched on this the other day. Garrett Cole touched on this as well. We don't know the answers to these questions. And so we shouldn't pretend that we do. That's the big thing.
Yeah, no, I think that there's some real truth in that. I don't know that there's a I would say, like a singular cause to what is going on. The reality is, and this is what I was taught when I was coming up, was that throwing a baseball is not your, it's not your arm's natural motion. It's just not, right? The snapping of your elbow is not something that your arm is designed to do, right? We throw a baseball opposite of what our body tells us we can do with it. So let's just throw that out there. That's a big thing. So mechanically, like guys, and especially Japanese pitchers, right, have tried to, I guess, contort their arm to an extent where they're not really throwing the ball like this. They're not kind of, you know, like you're taught in Little League, right? You're making the L and snapping down, but you're more chopping, right? And a lot of Japanese pitchers' arm motions, when it's sped up, move that way. And that seems to be helping to a certain degree. However, I think that the problem really does consist of what Major League Baseball prioritizes when they look for pitchers, right? Now, I'm never going to tell you that velocity isn't important, because it is, right? And this is not all, this is also not coming from a guy whose fastball topped out at 82 and he got hurt anyway. Okay. I'm not jealous of it. I'm very happy with where my life is right now and that I didn't make the major leagues. However, I mean, the question gets posed, and this is by a lot of older baseball fans as well. I mean, they don't think that Greg Maddux would have a shot in today's major leagues because he threw 85. Like his fastball sat in the 80s.
Well, at the end of his career, it did. People forget how hard he threw when he was younger.
Well, how hard? I'm young. You got to tell
me. He was a mid 90s guy through his prime. Like he was throwing. He was throwing. I mean, not, you know, the 98, 99 you see today, but that's what you and I remember, right? Because we're young guys. But I will say, like, he was throwing harder than that. But you're right in the sense that, like, you don't get the sense with Greg Maddux that he was pushed to be like, hey, you need to throw 99 no matter what.
Well, right. But even
so, your point's well taken.
Well, right. But even if Maddux is a bad example, right? Even if it's somebody like Andy Pettit was never mid to upper 90s, right? At his best was a low 90 kind of guy who could paint corners and put the ball wherever he wanted. Like that's the thing that I think people valued about Greg Maddux, is that Greg Maddux could literally put the ball wherever he wanted on any given pitch, no matter what, right? Like that guy's command is all time great. Right. So here's the question that I'll pose to you, right? Because again, you played at a higher level of baseball than I did. So, and you played against better competition. You were part of this. I mean, like, are major league scouts, or even college scouts for that matter, are they looking at pitchers the wrong way? Are they valuing velocity too much, do you think?
I would say no. Okay. And the reason I would say no is, like, this is more now than ever, what we value is based on what the data says gets people out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what we value now, based now more than ever, is based on what's going to get you the most swing and miss. That's not for no reason, right? We're from a baseball perspective, we're valuing the right things. Unfortunately, it doesn't make always for a prettier game, and you know, our commissioner is making decisions that are trying to rectify that artificially, and I have a lot of thoughts on that. But it doesn't make for a prettier game. But scouts are doing their job, right? Like by looking for that. And coaches are doing their job by coaching to that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair to point at scouts and coaches and those who are in control of deciding what's best for the game and telling them, hey, you needed to know that this was going to cause injury. Like, because Tyler Glasnow said this really well. I already mentioned it, but like he said it really well. If you are like, if you're a guy who needed Tommy John when you were in high school because you were throwing 97 and it ended up ending your career, you still made the right choice in terms of having the best chance to play pro.
Yeah.
Like that risk is a risk that you will take. Like it's a risk that if you care about trying to play pro, like you're going to take that risk.
Yeah.
because the, you know, the Greg Maddoxes of the world, if we want to use that comp, or the Jamie Moyers of the world, if we want to use that comp, right?
There, like, you go, right. Yeah.
Those aren't guys who, like, you making it to the big leagues that way now is a lot harder, because you're not going to get that second look. And so I don't think it's a matter of being coached wrong or scouted wrong. I think it's just that, like, this is an externality of the way the game is developing. And it's one of those things that, like, I think we have to figure out how to live with it and adjust to it, rather than, like, trying to rip the roots out of it.
Right. All right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't necessarily disagree. I think that velocity right now is definitely an important thing. And like you said, it's very data driven, right? If the numbers say that velocity is what is getting people out, then okay, you're going to sign guys that, you know, throw 99 with 18 inches of run. Like, that's what you're going to do. So I get it. So, all right. So let's move on to the second out. This is where it's going to get fun. So Dalton, I'm going to let you start with this, because this whole Ipe Mizuhara situation, there was this 37 page affidavit that came out that detailed everything that was going on. And if you read the whole thing, I mean, it really does kind of detail how, like how much of a problem Ipe Mizuhara has from a gambling perspective. It's actually kind of sad to this point. I mean, if you're not familiar with the situation, what was it alleged? It was about $16 million that was alleged that Ipe stole out of Ohtani's account directly. It wasn't even something that, like, he had changed the settings on his phone and everything like that to where he had access to Ohtani's account and Ohtani couldn't see the money moving. Like, it was very, very intricate. It was like the perfect crime. He literally did all of this to make sure he didn't get caught. Placed. He's in a $40 million hole. He made 19,000 bets within the span of 2 years. That's like 25 bets a day, every day for 2 years. I mean, that's kind of to the point where you're kind of betting on women's college curling. Like, it's just, it's a lot of stuff that, you know, you don't there. It's a problem. Let's just say that it's a problem.
Right.
So take it away.
Yeah. I mean, look, I said a lot 3 weeks ago on this topic to the extent of, like, why are we not taking this at face value? Right. Yep. I said it then, and I still feel the same way now.
Yeah.
No point in this entire process has Shohei Ohtani been accused of anything, nor have we had any concrete reason to believe that he did anything wrong. Obviously, as a Dodger fan, I'm glad that it came out this way. Also, as a baseball fan, I'm glad that it came out this way. It is a, like, if you read the document, it is a harrowing, sad story of an individual, you know, falling victim to gambling addiction, not knowing how to control it. You can, like, read the self-awareness as it goes along that he realizes that he's, like, in way too deep, which I think is, like, by the time this whole story ended in March, like, he had basically accepted the fact that, like, no, I'm going to have to face the music on this. Yeah. And, you know, Tyler Glasnow gave part of the interview that I was watching with him today. He was talking about how, like, in the Dodgers clubhouse, there was never really any concern about it, because he was saying something along the lines, like, these guys watched Shohei Ohtani immediately be like, no, take my phone, take my stuff, look through all my stuff, do it, like, go.
Yeah. Right.
Because he knew that, like, there was nothing really to worry about on his end. Yeah. I'm glad that, you know, Ipe will hopefully get the help that he needs. You know, unfortunately for him, like, this is not going to go away. He's not going to get his job back. Like, you know, he ruined his life.
He's going to go to prison, Dalton. I mean, yeah, he's going to go to jail.
Yeah, no, it's bad. I mean, I think, you know, like, from a baseball perspective, I'm glad Shohei wasn't involved, and I'm glad that, like, it was proven that way. There are always going to be people out there who, like, we can't convince otherwise because they want to believe that he did something wrong. So to those people, I say, go read the thing and, you know, I don't know, talk to a wall. Right. But for me, I'm just glad the story's over. I think it's fair to point fingers at his agency. I think it's fair to point fingers at whoever else is in his corner and ask them why they weren't more vigilant I think it's fair to point at Shohei and ask why he wasn't more vigilant. Although the things that we are learning about Shohei is he doesn't really want to be, he doesn't really want to manage his money. He wants to live a simple life where all he does is play baseball, which is understandable, right? That being said, I think it's fair to question the judgment of some people, but ultimately there was one party who was responsible for the wrongdoing here and who created this mess. So,
I think that now the information that we have is, it's pretty clear that this went a certain way. And you were right from the beginning, right? So let's just point that out, that you already kind of said, you know, as soon as this story came out, they're just like, okay, so if you actually look at all this, there wasn't any point where Shohei was even alleged of doing anything by anybody in this whole thing. So why is it fair to speculate and all of that stuff? So let's just point that out right there. I want to be clear because I agree. I think that, you know, I think there were people there were people that were rooting for Ohtani's downfall. I was speculating, but I was not rooting for his downfall. I was desperately hoping that there was nothing behind what was being reported, right? That's 100% a thing. No way did I, or should anybody have wanted that. Ohtani is phenomenal for the game of baseball. He just is, right? He is the best when he's pitching, playing on both sides. He is the best player in the world, period. You shouldn't want that to go away. That's the first thing. Okay, here we go. You ready?
Yeah, I guess you've been hyping this up to me off air and now on air. I'm just worried about what you're going to say.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. Hopefully you don't think less of me by the time this is over.
I'll tell you.
But, okay, so here's the first thing I want to bring up. Dalton said something very important. Whoever Shohei's financial people are, I don't care if they're his financial consultants, his advisors, his accountants, whoever, they're all fired. Like that has to, even if, okay, I can completely understand why Shohei Ohtani wants or doesn't want to manage his own money. I think that that's true of a lot of professional athletes. There are, listen, these guys make millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, especially the really good ones, right? They make millions upon millions. And I guarantee you that almost none of them look at their own bank accounts. I can guarantee that. Like, they all have people that manage their money for them, whether it's their agent, whether it's a separate financial consultant, whatever. Okay. And you have to trust wholeheartedly those people that are handling your money. So everybody in Ohtani's camp should be gone. That's the first thing. Okay. Here's the second thing. This is more speaking to the speculation of this whole thing. Okay. I am one of those people that, despite the fact that Ohtani was not really accused of any wrongdoing, I did think that it smelled funny. Now, I still, to an extent, am not completely, and I understand that Dalton's going to give me the side eye, but I am not completely eliminating the fact that there is any wrongdoing. Now, I will say this. I am to the point where I'm ready to move on. There's enough there for me to say, okay, I can put this to bed. This is really where I want to go with this. I think I can say the same thing about Trevor Bauer. That's where I want to go. Because here's the reality. Trevor Bauer had, he got, obviously he was accused of brutally sexually assaulting that one woman, right?
And more.
Hold on. The one that we know about, okay? The one that we know about is she admitted that she lied. There's evidence to say that she lied. Now, that's not to say that nothing didn't go wrong. I'm not saying.
So if we're talking about what people admitted, He also admitted to being aware that she was unconscious and punching her in the face. If we're going to be talking about what people admit.
Yeah. Right? Well,
That's assault by definition, right? There's no consent you can give for that. Just to be clear.
To an extent, yeah, I would agree.
No, not to an extent. That's assault by definition.
Well, hey, listen. This, like I said, this is what I was expecting, okay? There have been instances to the point right now, right, where there were videos of this girl on her phone smiling next to him in bed with nothing. So I am one of these people that says, okay, due process is due process. You have to go through these things, right? But that case is done. Okay. Everything else is either completely anonymous or, again, tried in the court of public opinion. So what we know publicly is, okay, that's enough for me to say, if we're allowed to speculate, and again, I'm not comparing the two situations to the point of the criminality of the whole thing or the brutality of the whole thing, but in the instances here, if we're just kind of making comparisons, if Otani is in kind of the boat of, all right, the evidence does support that he's innocent, I think we got to kind of treat both fairly here.
No.
So there you go.
No, because like that's first of all, when you cut up that clip and put it on social media of you saying everything you just said, take me out of it. Like, cut me out of it. Okay. Seriously. Like, cut me out of it. I don't want to have my face near any of that. I want to start there. Because the level of it, like, this is not a matter of, well, we don't know. No, these cases could not be more different. We don't have, like, the court in the Otani case released everything to us, right? They gave us everything.
Sure.
In the Bauer case, that is in a lot more sensitive information. Like, MLB has everything. We don't have everything. Like, the idea that, like, the amount of information that we have on these two situations is remotely similar is completely untrue. We also, like, this whole idea that Trevor Bauer has been exonerated, no, he hasn't. That's not true. Like, he's settled. This is not, like, these are apples and oranges. Like, totally different situations that should not be compared in the slightest. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't really want to give it any more time of day than that. Like, there were a lot of places that I thought you were going to take this to piss me off. This was not one. So I don't know, like, to me, the idea of making that comparison, I'm floored by it, Mike, just being honest with you. Like, it doesn't make a lick of sense. It's a reach. The idea that there's video of her laughing in bed next to him, who gives a shit? Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, that's not evidence of anything. Like, there are videos of every rape victim in the world smiling at one point in their life and probably smiling with the person who did it to them at one point. Like, the idea that would even be brought up on this platform is embarrassing. So I want to be taken out of that entire clip. And I would really rather we just move on to another topic, because that was, like, asinine. So I'll let you go ahead and introduce whatever we're doing next, because I'm not talking about that more.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's go to the third out. So the Astros are off right now to quite an underwhelming start to this point where they're 6-11. Right now they're standing last in the AL West. They got swept by the Yankees earlier on in the year to start the year. They lost. They split that series with the Rangers. They got swept by the Royals in Kansas City. They're off to a tough start, and it's not really going to get any better for them since they're playing the Braves in this upcoming series. Dalton, how worried at this point should the Astros be going forward?
I think the worry for them is, to me, more long-term than short-term, as weird as that is to say. I think part of what is starting to befall the Astros is what they were built on was an incredible analytical background, with guys like Lunau, who for everything that he was that was shitty, was also an unbelievable baseball executive, to now, from everything that we're hearing, Dana Brown is just turning the reins over to guys who used to play the game, as if guys who used to play the game are automatically like good talent evaluators and good like organizational builders. Like, that's right. A problem. We don't see that work out all that often in sports. So to me, like, there's enough talent on that team that they're going to be fine, both like pitching and hitting. Like, there's just enough talent built up there. There's enough, you know, postseason cachet built up there in terms of reputation that, like, I'm not too worried about them this year. I still think they win that division. I still think that they're a World Series contender. The pitching's been a little concerning, but I think it'll work itself out. The concern for me is that, like, you know, I heard this said on another show I was listening to, that, like, there's a real argument that team might be really bad in, like, 2 years. Because I'm just not, like it seems as if they're kind of going away from what wins organizationally. Like, they're going away from what got them to where they are organizationally. And I'm just – I, like – from like a 5 to 7 year view standpoint, I'm selling my stock in the Astros. From a 2024 standpoint, I'm probably buying the dip. That's how I look at them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, here's the thing. The Astros to me have a very, very specific problem. And it's, I feel like it's not one that we talk about very often. Like, just as baseball people, this is not something that we talk about very often. Right. How the Astros are getting to their back end is a real issue. Like, and I'm to the point where I'm like, okay, like, you're going to need these starters to give you 6-7 innings every start. Like we're at a point, and obviously how unrealistic that is, because starters just don't have it like that every day. But I mean, this is a team that where the middle of their bullpen can't get anybody out. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at here. I mean, look, as far as like Brian Abreu for the most part this season has been, I mean, very not good to start the year. He's been really kind of a liability in the back of their pen. And, you know, as far as, you know, like I said, they've got enough injuries to speak of, right? I think Verlander's kind of is going to make his return in the coming week or so, but I mean, after that, I mean, you've got starting pitchers even that are going to get, like, Hunter Brown is getting, you know, JP France is getting shelled to start the year. So, you know, we're kind of at a point now where you're like, okay, are all of these pitchers that are going to potentially come back in the middle of the year, is it even going to matter to that point? Because if they keep losing games like this, then we can both kind of agree that the A's and the Angels are not going to make any noise in that division without any stretch of the imagination. I think we can both come to an agreement on that. However, the Mariners and the Rangers are real teams, and the Rangers are going to have pitchers of their own that are going to come back and strengthen their rotation. And it's been way better than what we've seen from the Astros this year. If you would have told me that, okay, I have a concern in their bullpen, and I'm talking about either the Rangers or the Astros, I would have said, okay, well, then it's the Rangers, because the Rangers had problems last year. They just don't have the names in their bullpen like the Astros do. But even Josh Hader hasn't been great. Like, their bullpen's a real, real problem, Dalton. I think that's going to be a long-term issue. That's just not something that's easy to fix. It's not.
I don't know that I agree. I think that's probably one of the easiest things to fix.
You think so?
In terms of like acquiring talent on the cheap on the trade market, go grab a couple relievers who are running hot. Go grab a starter who's running hot. We know the Astros are going to be active at the deadline. Like, that's something that they've
yeah, been always like, right.
Look, they're 6-11. They're tied 1-1 at the Braves tonight, but that looks like that's about to get out of hand for Arrigetti, their starter. I think realistically, like, if this 6-11 turns into like 15-25, and 15-25 turns into 30-43, like, then things can start to get hairy as we go along, but I don't think we're quite there yet. And after this Atlanta series, you know, they get Washington, Cubs are pretty good, but then they get Colorado, then they get Cleveland. That's a lot of winnable games. coming up for them. This is also a team that has 24 games left combined on their schedule against the Angels and the A's. So, like,
yeah,
to me, it's hard to imagine them going worse than like 16-8 in those 24 games. Mm-hmm. So, like, if we take a 16-8, we plop it on their record right now. That's 27-18.
Right.
I know that's like a silly exercise, but like, I just think that, you know, look, the Yankees beat up on them. The Yankees are red hot. They took 2 out of 3 from Toronto. That's something, you know. Texas is playing pretty good ball. Kansas City's on fire. And then they took 2 out of 3 from Texas. To me, it's kind of early season blues so far. And I think that the pen issues are real, but like, it's the same pen issues the Dodgers have. And like, we're not talking about the Dodgers that way, right? Like, the Dodgers have Phillips at the back and Hudson at the back, and they trust him. They have no way to get there right now unless their starters cover a bunch of innings. But the bats are just covering it for the Dodgers right now. Like, well,
Dodgers are winning games, though. Like, I think that's really the difference. Is that you're right. The problems are similar, but like, the Dodgers are finding ways to win above that. Right. I mean, the Astros are what the Astros are doing now is they're losing games late. Like, they get out to early leads and then they lose late. Because they can't close games. Now, to an extent, I agree with you to the point where, like, okay, maybe I'm overestimating the difficulty of this being a problem to fix. But that's also where, like, you need to fix Abreu's issues. You need to fix Presley's issues at some point in this year. Now, I'm not ready to hit the full-blown panic button, but this is definitely something that I think, like, you can't wait until the deadline to fix this, right? This is that you got to fix this like May 1.
I think you see where you're at May 1, right? Let's say they lose 2 out of 3 to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And now they're sitting at 7-13. And then they go on this it's an 8-game road trip. Let's say they go on this 8-game road trip, they go 4-4.
Yeah.
Right. And then you beat Cleveland at home, you finish the month four games under. Mm-hmm. 5 games under.
Right.
Like, it's just not – like, to me, once they start getting 10, 15 under, that's when you start to have those conversations. 6-11 is such a tiny sample, man. Like, it's so easy to forget that this early in the season.
Yeah.
Like, 6-11 is just not a representative sample of anything.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to really get that bent out of shape about it, especially because these guys you're talking about, Ryan Presley's been good for a long time. Like,
he has been, sure.
I'd bet on him finding it. Josh Hader's been good for a long time. I'd bet on him finding it, you know? Yeah. Abreu, we'll see, you know. But I just think that – I think that there are enough pieces there that they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Maybe figuring it out for them means that they're a wild card this year and it's a division champion. I could see that happening. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm not concerned that the Astros are going to go, you know, 72-90. I just don't
think – no, God.
I don't think that's in the cards, right? So,
no.
But if I'm the Astros, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, if I'm an Astros fan, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, man, like, we better get after it this year, because these guys are getting old. They're running out of time. Like, you know, I mean, I get some of the guys aren't getting old, right? But like, some of these dudes, like Altuve's not getting younger. Bregman's about to be a free agent. I doubt they're going to bring him back. That core has slowly been breaking apart, and they don't have the system that they had before. That's not – it's not a good farm system. There are not the replacements coming that there were when they lost Correa and when they lost Springer, right? Those guys, you lost them, and you knew you had a Jeremy Pena coming up. You knew you had a Yiner Diaz coming up, right? Like,
right.
That system's dry now. So, I think because of that, they're going to go balls to the wall to fix problems over time too.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely possible that they do that. It's tough to imagine that this was once before the Astros got this good, they were terrible.
Oh yeah.
For a while. Like, they were awful for a good stretch.
What the Orioles are doing now is what the Astros did in the mid 2010s.
Oh my gosh.
It was like, we're going to be awful and we're going to get number one picks and we're just going to stack up talent in the minors. And then we're eventually going to unleash it. And it worked for them, and it's working now pretty well for the Orioles too. We've seen plenty of examples of teams that doesn't work too, and those ones don't get talked about. But, you know, it's that was the model they went with. And now we're kind of reaching the end of that era a little bit, I think, for them. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, you're probably right about that. We are reaching the end of that era. Here's the other thing, too, is that, like, I've been saying that for years, that being terrible, like this is why I don't understand the whole, and we don't have to go down this rabbit hole for that long, but this is why I don't understand why the whole tanking thing is such a big deal. I just don't get it, right? That is how you get good. If you are awful, if you suck for a half decade, guess what? You're going to be good for the next decade. Like, that's kind of how I feel on this whole thing.
I think there are too many examples to the contrary, though. Like, we look at the Astros as the shining example of that, and the Orioles as the shining example of that. But we don't talk about the Tigers, who have been awful for 12 years and now are just kind of starting to get good.
Sure, I understand that.
You know, we don't talk about how long it took. Like, I mean, the A's have been down for a little while, right? Like,
well, yeah, but that's also, I mean, listen, the A's haven't even had a problem with developing players. The problem with the A's is that they developed players and then let them go. Like, that's like, as soon as their players get good, they trade them all.
Right. But what I'm saying is, like, I think this idea that, like, if you want to get good, you just got to get bad, it doesn't always work.
No, like, it doesn't.
It works if you hit on the right draft picks, you get the right guys in, you have good, you're good at developing players, you're analytically driven. That's part of why it works. Like, I don't think the Astros can hit the reset button on that with Jeff Bagwell calling the shots, is what I'm getting at.
No, maybe not. Maybe you not. Know? But this is kind of where I'm getting at, though, is that, like, yeah, it doesn't always work, but if you're going, the worst thing that you can be in sports, in my opinion, is average, right? Because you're not good enough to be among the top contenders, and you're not bad enough to get premier talent to get yourself back to a position of that. I'm just kind of the belief that, okay, if you're like, if you're going to be like the White Sox forever, then, like, I just don't see you getting anywhere. Like, that's kind of where I'm going.
My thing with that, I agree with you if we're talking about football or we're talking about basketball. I don't agree with that in baseball. Like in baseball, what spot you get picked in the first round, like, the extent to which that matters with major league success is, like, that correlation is so much looser than it is.
It is. You're right. Yes.
Like, the Dodgers have made a killing in the draft, and they're never drafting higher than, like, 25.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, it's one of those things. Like, to me, it's so much more about what are you pouring into your scouting and development than it is, like, how are you tanking? Now, right. where I think those teams can make the decisions that matter there for me, it's not about how much you're losing, it's about what you're getting when you trade things away.
Yeah.
Like, the Nationals are starting to see that bear fruit a little bit, right? Like, James Wood is mashing in the minors for them. CJ Abrams is starting to look really good. Josiah Gray, another guy with an unfortunate elbow injury, right? But they're starting to see it with him. Mackenzie Gore looks okay. Like, they're an example of, I think, it not working out quite as well, but it's kind of on its way. To me, it's not so much you have to be really, really bad for a while. It's when you're bad, you have to do a good job of reinvesting in the talent. Mm-hmm. And I think where the Astros got that right, where the Orioles got that right, is, like, the investments that they're making in player development. But, like, the White Sox aren't investing in player development. The A's aren't investing in player development. They're just bad. The Rockies are another example of that, right? Like, the Rockies have no idea how to develop talent. They're just bad. And it's just, like, being bad doesn't mean you're going to be good. It's being bad and doing the right things that give you that chance. That's
sure. Well, yeah, I agree. I think that kind of goes without saying. I don't want to make it seem like I'm saying that that's the exact science of how you get good. You're right. You have to put the right resources into player development and all of that stuff. But at the same time, I think we wouldn't be talking about the Orioles the same way we'd be talking about them if they didn't have the number one pick to go get Jackson Holliday, right? Well, and you're right. You're right. It's to the point where, like, in the major league draft, you're right, where you get drafted is less important than how it is in the NFL and in the NBA, but those guys do get drafted there for a reason at the same time.
Sure. But so here's what I would say, right? My main counter to it is that is a way that can work to get good.
Sure.
But if we actually look at, like, okay, who are the best teams around the league right now, consensus, right? The Dodgers were not built that way. The Yankees were not built that way. The Jays, the Blue Jays, if you consider them one, right? They weren't built that way. Mm-hmm. The Braves were not built that way. Who am I missing, right? The Astros were built that way. The Twins were not built that way. Like, more often than not, the teams that are really good, when they're bad, they're okay. They're mediocre. They're below average. And then they start to hit on players because they're investing in hitting on players. I don't think you have to be bad to do that. To me, the being bad is just owners being cheap. So I guess that's kind of where I come in on that.
Right. Well, to wrap up this Astros bit, right now, as far – and this is excluding what they're doing tonight. Right now, they are 29th in K per nine. They are 29th in team ERA this season. They have a 5.32 team ERA to start the year. In pretty much in every pitching category, they are in the bottom of the league. Batting average against, hits allowed, runs allowed, stolen bases against. They're 28th in WHIP. They give up. I mean, it's just it has not been a great pitching year for the Astros. However, in a lot of the offensive categories, they're top five, and I think that that's something to look up on as well. Average, they're third. On base percentage, they're fifth. Slugging, third. OPS, third. You know, they hits third. They're right there among the top teams in the league as far as their offensive production, but their pitching has been failing them. I don't think we can expect that to carry on throughout the rest of the season. Okay, so let's give you a score update here. Right now, Yankees still trailing the Blue Jays 3-1 here in the top of the seventh. The Blue Jays are one of those teams, and I don't want to harp on this. This is a team that I think really struggles in their pen, too. They're going to be a team that loses games late in their series when they don't have the fresh bullpen coming into one. So I think that's something to keep an eye out with as well. Orioles right now with a 7-4 lead in the bottom of the eighth against the Twins. 1-0 Rangers still heading into the bottom of the ninth. Detroit with their last licks coming up. Still tied at one. Rockies and Phillies in Philadelphia in the top of the ninth. Giants have a 4-3 lead against the Marlins. They jumped out to the lead. They're going into the ninth inning. Angels and Rays. Angels up 5-1 heading into the bottom of the eighth. Pirates and Mets knotted at three in the bottom of the sixth. Padres and Brewers knotted at three in the top of the fifth. Kansas City and Chicago. Kansas City has that 2-0 lead in Chicago heading into the sixth inning. And the Braves took a 2-1 lead over the Braves. The Braves took a 2-1 lead over the Astros heading into the third. Okay, so let's move on to this. So let's play a little game, Dalton. What are we thinking, right? Because we're now at the point where, you know, it's very early to tell where teams are going to end up, right? But we both kind of had a preconceived notion, especially about these two teams. You're wearing one of their caps right now. The Pirates are off to a great start and the Kansas City Royals are off to a great start. Right now, the Pirates are 11-5 to start the year. Kansas City is 10-6 to start the year. These are two teams that are on the younger side, have a little bit more upside than some of the older teams in the league, obviously, but are getting off to, I think, better starts than most people expected. So the question I'm going to pose is this. Who do you think at this point in the year, again, it's a very early sample size. Who do you think is a better chance of being legit between the Pirates and the Royals?
Oh, it's Kansas City for me. Kansas City. I mean, now I will say both these teams made legitimate additions in the offseason and I commend them for it.
Sure.
You know, these are two teams that like seem to be taking a step toward trying to win.
Definitely.
But the depth of talent right now at the major league level for Kansas City is greater. You know, I think I said on our preseason previews for the Central that I thought Kansas City has a little bit of Cincinnati Reds to them this year. I don't think they are a team that's going to like actually contend for a playoff spot, but I think they're a team that like, I would not be shocked to see them cover with, you know, flirt with 500. Like this pitching staff's pretty good. Like Cole Reagan's is nasty. The bullpen actually has a little bit of bite to it. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. is quietly one of the best players in baseball. It's not a bad team, man. Like Vinny Pasquantino being back and hitting the way he's been hitting is fun to watch. This is actually a pretty good roster. It's not great. It's not playoff quality, but like this is not a bottom feeder anymore, and I think that's here to stay. Pittsburgh, look, I just don't quite see it yet. Like I think they're getting better. It's nice to see them start to take a step, but like that rotation's awful. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
The rotation's awful, and there is not the depth of talent. Michael A. Taylor's had a great start. Easy guy to root for. That's been cool, right?
Golden sombrero the other night for him.
Well, that notwithstanding. But, like, there's just the Pirates, I think, are a year further away than Kansas City. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I here's the thing. I was really kind of hoping for disagreement here, but I think I agree with you. I think Kansas City is, first of all, I think their path forward is easier. I just do, right? The AL Central is a way worse division than the NL. And let's be clear. The NL Central is not great, but those are at least teams that have, you know, have shown progress forward, right? Yeah. The Cubs have made progress. Cincinnati has made progress. You know, for some reason, the Brewers are still good. The Brewers are turning into the Rays. They find ways to be good even without anybody. So I think I'm going to hold my stock right now in the Pirates, but let's go back to the Royals for a second. I feel like we're kind of waiting for Salvador Perez to decline with the bat, and he just seemingly is not. He's just not.
He's only 33. I mean, I get he's a catcher, but man, he's, you know.
Yeah.
He's not as old as we imagine him to be. I'll say that.
Doesn't he just, seems older, doesn't he? it seems like he's been around the league for a decade, for 5 decades.
Yeah. Cool. Cause he has been around the league for a legitimate decade. Like he came up and was their starting catcher early. I mean, when they were in those World Series, he was, you know, we're talking 2014, what, a decade ago. I mean,
yeah,
he was a guy for them then. So he has been around a long time, but he's not as old as we think.
Yeah, no, really not. I mean, but you're right. You pretty much touched on all of it. I mean, the rotation has done a very good job keeping them in games. Obviously, Michael Wacha has been fairly good. Cole Reagans obviously is a stud. They've done a really nice job keeping them in games with that rotation. But they're hitting they're hitting well too. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr., like you said, is. I think we kind of expected him to take a leap, but I mean, to this extent, I didn't expect. Right. Like Bobby Witt Jr. is, I mean, he's by the end of the year. I mean, are we talking about like, I don't know, best shortstop in the game potentially by the end of the year?
I mean, I think I'll put it this way. Like Corey Seager is a pretty big roadblock for that.
Yeah.
He's a special player, man.
Oh, like, yeah.
Like he's going to be a star of this game for a long time. I hope he can stay healthy because there's and it's funny because we knew this about him when he was getting called up, right? It's just he plays in Kansas City. It's like people always say, and I know this will piss you off, but it's like if Derek Jeter plays in Kansas City, you know, there's a little bit of that to it where it's like, no, this guy, if he were in a big market, would be getting like the attention, but he's in Kansas City.
Yeah, man, it's not the first time I heard that. Was that if Jeter played in Kansas City, would we really? Okay. All right, let's move on. So team of the week that was, Dalton, who impressed you last week?
You know, for me, it's I've been kind of waffling. Like I want to say the Royals just because, like, of what they've done surprising so far this season. Like, it's hard to not go with them when they blow up and they blow out the Astros for a whole series. But I also, you know, I hate doing it. I got to give some love to the Padres. Like multiple huge comebacks over the last week. You know, not only against the Dodgers. I mean, that whole series, Dodgers were playing from ahead and we were never comfortable. And part of it's that the bullpen's a bit of a mess, but this Padres team can hit. It's legitimately a lineup that's good. Jackson Merrill's been awesome to watch for them. I think the Padres quietly might have the best bullpen in the National League right now.
Yeah.
It's funny because they lost Hader, and so everybody's down on the bullpen. But Suarez is coming out throwing 102. Yuki Matsui's tough to hit. Cosgrove is disgusting against lefties. Like, that roster's deep, man. Like the guys at the back of that bullpen.
The Yankees.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I mean, Michael King, the Dodgers – the Dodgers crushed him, but stuff's nasty, right? So I think the Padres, I said it preseason, I'll say it now, I'm making them my team of the week just because of what they did to the Dodgers. Like, I just was really impressed watching them up close for those three games. But I think you make an argument for the Royals too. Who do you got on that?
Yeah, you know, just because they've surprised me, and they still have yet to lose a series, and they're going into places, tough places to play in winning series. I'm going to take the Milwaukee Brewers. I just, this is one of those teams where it's like, you know, going into the season, right? This is a team that, you know, Yelich is aging in the wrong direction. They kind of made these weird moves, right? Like, they traded Corbin Burns. Okay. They didn't get much back for Corbin Burns, but then they go and sign Rhys Hoskins to beef up the lineup a little bit. I mean, look, man, they took 2 out of 3 in Baltimore. They took 2 out of 3. They were supposed to play 4, but 2 out of 3 in Cincinnati. They took 2 out of 3 against the Mariners. They took 2 out of 3. They swept the Mets. Like, and again, just dating back to last week, 2 road series wins against, I think you and I would both agree, 2 not bad teams for a team that we thought was due for serious regression. That's impressive to me. I mean, I know that we're kind of seeing, we're seeing a lot of power out of Jackson Chourio early in his career, right? But I did not expect a team like this with seemingly this many holes from what I saw to be taking out 2 out of 3 games from the Orioles in Baltimore. I didn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, I was down on the Brewers preseason. I'm still not all the way bought in. Like, it's so early, but
sure.
But they're not bad. I mean, they're clearly not, like, they're clearly going to be a problem in that division, because that division is one where anybody can be a problem, right? So there's a lot to like with them. You know, I think for them that the youth is kind of all showing up and playing well. So, and Yelich looks rejuvenated too. Like, he looks good. So yeah, I mean, the Hoskins thing seems to fit like a glove.
It does.
You know, I it's funny, you see him in that uniform and like it kind of looks weird, and then it kind of makes sense.
It does. He's got Philly written all over him, and now he's just right. It looks like he got dressed wrong.
But no, I mean, they're interesting. Now, I will say, they just blew a lead 3-0. Now the Padres are up on them in that game and threatening to score more. This is what the Padres have been doing.
That's what happens, man. I talk about teams and they just, the exact opposite happens a second before. Nobody should listen to me. That's why you make the betting picks and not me. okay. So who do you like? So right now, let's close it out with this, before we go into hot corner. This coming week, I don't know. Who do you like, Dalton? What's the series that you're looking at here?
There are some pretty fun ones. The series that I'm most looking forward to is probably Orioles-Royals. And I don't think that's, we would have thought we'd be saying that preseason. But the Orioles are obviously good, right? I don't think they're a 100-win good team, and I said that preseason, but they're obviously good. Yeah. And I think this is a Royals team that, like, is really relishing these opportunities to kind of prove themselves. It's a great fan base in Kansas City, one that, like, you don't have to do that much to convince them to start showing up and giving a lot of support. So, I think it should be a good environment at Kauffman Stadium this weekend. And, you know, assuming Kansas City handles business this week with the White Sox and keeps winning, should be a pretty compelling series, right? It's one of those, like, another prove it opportunity for the Royals. So that's one that I'm excited about, Royals hosting the O's.
Yeah. I think it's funny that you said the Orioles, because I'm picking the series that they're playing right now against the Twins. I think that's going to be a really interesting series as well, especially with the games that they have coming up, right? This was kind of the like first game, whatever sort of game for me without the best pitching matchup, right? It was Louis Varland and Cole Irvin. But the next two games for them, it's Paddock and Rodriguez, and then it's Lopez and Tyler Wells. Like, that, I think those are two fairly good pitching matchups. Obviously, you know, early on in the year, Lopez and Wells are both, you know, kind of boasting, you know, higher than expected ERAs, right? Lopez in the high 4s, Wells in the high 5s. But again, they're both entering what, their third, fourth start of the season. You know, this is kind of a point where I'm like, okay, I look at this and I see two potential division winners, right? Obviously, we both really like the Twins to win that division. The Orioles right now, they just called up Jackson Holliday. Everybody's excited about that. And he has struggled mightily since he's gotten called up. But these are two teams that I think could be seeing each other again down the road. That's my pick. I think right now, super duper interesting is Twins Orioles this coming week in the next couple of days.
Yeah. Well, the big question with the Twins is like, are they ever going to start hitting?
Yeah.
That to start the season has been ghastly, and the injuries are mounting.
Yeah, Royce Lewis out, Carlos Correa out. It's a real problem. You're right.
The Twins are very lucky they play in that division because they're not going to fall out of contention. But they better get it going at some point, right? Yeah. The bats just have not shown up.
Do you think they will? Like, obviously, it's a long season. Obviously, we both know that. I don't think we need to keep repeating it. But like, do you think the bats will come around, or do you think this could be a year long problem for them?
No, I mean, I think just from a regression standpoint, they will. But you wonder how long it's going to take. Like, it's certainly not a comfortable thing for Twins fans.
Sure. All right. Okay. So that does it for that. So let's move. Honestly, we'll close out the show this way. Let's go to Dalton's Hot Corner. Let's see if we can find some ways to put some money in your pocket. Dalton, what do you have?
Yeah. So looking at a game tomorrow night, line up at DraftKings already, it's square, but it just feels like one that it's hard to see it going the other way. Phillies minus a run and a half. You can get it at minus 112 over the Rockies tomorrow night. Wow. This is just one where Austin Gomber, if you look at his Savant numbers over the last couple of years, this is one of the worst starting pitchers in baseball.
Yeah.
And, going into that ballpark against that lineup is just not a good combination for him. It's baseball. You might surprise us, but I just don't see it going well. And this is a Rockies team that ranks 26th in baseball in WRC plus against left-handed pitching. Ranger Suarez is a guy that he's become pretty darn consistent. 2-0, 2.65 so far. He's going to go out there and give you six strong. I think Philly's offense breaks out a bit tomorrow. Yeah. You're also looking at a much deeper bullpen in Philly relative to Colorado. Both teams are in the 10th inning right now. Both teams using their bullpen a lot tonight. So, what bullpen do you think handles that wear and tear better? It's hard for me to see Philly scoring less than 5 or 6 runs tomorrow.
Yeah.
And if they do that, covering the run and a half, I don't think it'll be much of an issue for them. So Philly's minus 1.5, minus 112. I think it's just one of those straightforward bets that you just make and set and forget.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, I think you and I are both in a survivor pool with a couple of your buddies. And what was it like? 90% of the group picked the Phillies this week with the two series they've got coming up.
Yeah, I mean, Rockies, White Sox at home. If the Phillies can't make hay this week, then they need to
– then we're all screwed. Yeah. Yeah. Then we all know nothing about baseball. Okay. All right, so real quick before we go, I do just want to address this really quick just because it hasn't felt right since the segment ended. I do – because, again, I don't – there are some times when you say things on the air – and Dalton, look at Dalton smiling – but there are sometimes when you say things on the air that don't really have a place, right? You say them in your head, you prep it before the show starts, and then when it comes out, you realize that it was a mistake. So as far as the Shohei Ohtani situation, me comparing it to Trevor Bauer is unfair. I will apologize to my co-host here. I think that he deserves a little bit better than that. I think I should have been smarter in that respect. I think Dalton's probably right. I think I did reach. I was thinking about it in my head over the weekend, and I was thinking, maybe this might be a decent comparison to draw, but as it comes out, it just doesn't feel right. So I will apologize to Dalton. I will apologize to all of my grid co-members as well, especially coming from somebody who founded the Grid Network. I feel like we should expect better. So I just want to throw that out there before we leave the air today.
You don't need to apologize to me, but I appreciate the sentiment. I mean, look, I think it's one of those things where part of what makes this show fun is that we're both going to try to come out of left field. And sometimes the goal is to get under the other one's skin. So I respect what you're going for in that sense. I think in that particular instance, it was a little bit too much of a stretch for me.
I'm sure it was. Yeah.
And, as I told you when we were planning out this show from the beginning, I'm not going to hold back if I feel that way. I'm just going to tell you. So onward we go, man.
Onward we go. All right. So that does it for us. Bi-Coastal Baseball. This is the Bi-Coastal Baseball Podcast on the Grid Network, the only exclusive baseball podcast on the Grid Network. As for Dalton Brown, I am Mike Guido, sporting the Kansas City Royals hat today. Royals getting a lot of love today. Bobby Witt Jr., we talked a lot about them today. Man, oh, man.
It felt like the right hat to go with this week. We'll see who earns it for next week.
See who earns it for next week. All right. Hey, listen, Mayo, we'll make that a thing. We'll make that a thing. Whoever earns it the most is where, well, would, however many hats Dalton has. I don't know if Dalton has 30 hats already.
I don't have 30, but I'll do my best.
That's right. All right. Again, as for Dalton Brown, I am Mike Guido. We will see you next week.